Well, let me first thank the organizers for this opportunity to give a talk about some of the work we've been doing over the last few years. So in the blink of an eye, I think, it's interesting, 10 years already has passed. We've had great successes, and we have also have to pay some prices. One of the prizes is that I come to this workshop, I realize that half the talk, I really don't quite understand what is going on. That means I don't really get it. So for those of you who never had the opportunity to read my papers, because I had an interesting conversation with Sandro 2 days ago, he said in the beginning, before 97, when we were working this business, we were basically reading everybody's papers. Then 3 years later, we started reading everybody else's abstracts. These days, we just read the titles, okay? So I assume that most of you have not read my paper either, yeah. So I give you a one sheet summary of what I will be talking today. Yes, hopefully, you're going to remember, you know, what is going on here. So in this talk, I will mainly concentrating on controlled generation of this type of state, which we call NGHZ state, or maximum entangled state, of two state atoms. This type of state is characterized by the fact there is strong correlation between the first atom and second atom and all the rest of the atoms. So if the first atom is in the excited state or spin up state, then all the rest of the atoms are in the same state. If it is to be in the ground state, then all the rest is also in that same state. But for each of the individual atoms, there's half probability. That means 50% chance of being in either state. This state we call maximum entangled state. And if these particles are identical particles like bosons, then we would have a spin polarized condensate in this state in amplitude plus a spin polarized condensate in the other state. This state should be contrasted with a condensate of two components as what's been already made, for instance, in a lot of two-component experiments. Those corresponding to a condensate where each of these individual atoms is a superposition of two states. The difference between these two states are dramatic. For instance, in this state, everything is local. Each individual atom makes a choice when you perform a measurement. Each individual atom would have 50% probability of being up and down. But this one, there's strong correlations. These type of correlations are non-classical, and we generally loosely call them entanglement. And this is very useful, for instance, for quantum information. In addition, this type of state has a lot of practical implications. For instance, one of the very well-known implications is that they can be used to make Heisenberg-limited measurements. Because if I could use a beam splitter, for instance, as Mark Kasimovich illustrated, yes? If I could split this state such that in the upper arms, where the gravitational potential is large, I would have atoms in this particular state, then the gravitational potential shift accumulates n times. So it's like you have a ruler which is amplified by n times. So this is what basically I will be trying to say today, using atomic Bose-Einstein condensate. So for those of you who have heard my talks recently, and I will also spend a minute to tell you what's new since the last 3 or 4 months. What is new is the following. We realized that in the process of generating this type of state using so-called symmetric JY square type of interactions, we can actually make a quantum logic qubit. That means we can make logic encodings such that it would correct single bit errors. This is the first thing. Second thing is that we finally realized that these states actually can be used as a basis. They are complete basis in the following sense. You see, this is a maximum entangled state. If my first spin or first two-state atom is flipped to any arbitrary directions, it's still maximum entangled state. In particular, first spin can be down. As long as here it is up, then this is a maximum entangled state. So if I have n two-level state or n qubits, then this maximum state entangled states forms a complete set of bases. There are 2 to the power of n of them. If we use this basis, it turns out that its dynamics can be understood, and this has significant implications for the errors that would potentially be introduced. So why are we interested in this? Why, this is basically my 3 cents contribution to see what quantum gases will be useful. I think we think this is neat stuff, and we really want to see how useful it is. And at this workshop, we have heard a lot. I think we have heard that this helps to understand many body physics. It's really nice to see a lot of condensed matter theorists now really think there's new physics here, yes? So then it is also useful for precision measurement, for perhaps for even for EDM or parity measurement. If you look at these spin polarized samples, certainly you can make pressing arguments that this may be useful. So what I will essentially try to outline through this very small talk is that I think perhaps it's not by accident that quantum gases will be very useful for quantum information science. I just want to remind you, everybody, that it's in 1995 we had these huge successes. Yes, several groups independently achieved the Bose-Einstein condensation. Around that time, there were also 2 important developments. One was Peter Scholl's idea that a quantum computer can factorize numbers in a very easy fashion. The other is Lovegrove's idea that you can efficiently search order the database. So these 2 ideas has led over the last 10 years an explosive field which is called quantum computing. I think this is probably the only other, well, maybe I will offend somebody, maybe the only other branches of physics that is as active as, well, certainly as atomic Bose gases. I think this is maybe exaggerating. But if you look at at the popular press papers, this is certainly true. Sometimes people get upset when I say this. So before I start to talk about this entanglement, let me just say a little bit, what do we mean by entangled, yes? So if I have n particle wave function, usually you say if this wave function is a product of wave functions of individual particles. So individual particles could have many, many orbitals. So this is a general wave function. And then we say this is local because these individual parties can be anywhere, yes? I mean, this one can be here, this one can be in China, this other one can be in Georgia, whatever. But this is easily said than done, because if I give you a wave function, ask you whether it is entangled or not, this is not easy. Although we know all the tests, mathematically it's very clear how do you do the test. But these tests are exponentially difficult. That means if I give you one more particle, it becomes a lot more difficult to test them. So we really need some efficient ways of being able to test and calibrate these states. So far, we only know that for 2 particles, this is reasonably easy because there's something called a matrix can be diagonalized or called Schmidt decomposition. For 3 particles or even more, this becomes very, very difficult. So why I'm saying this? Because now we really want to make a jump, make a step from distinguishable particles to identical particles. And here there are even more things that are uncertain. In this particular talk, I'm going to concentrate on bosonic particles. We are also working on fermionic particles. It turns out that these things may become even richer there. But even in the bosonic particles, I will show that our experiment is at the level where a lot of things perhaps already can be explored in the laboratories. What did it say? Sorry about that. I just got this computer, so don't worry. So normally when we talk about the scalar condensate, I mean, this is very easy. You put atoms into these orbitals. So all the atoms are in the same orbitals. So for bosonic gas, I say this is not correlated or not entangled. In fact, this viewpoint is consistent with our condensed matter colleagues, yes? So in the Bose-Fermi condensate cases, for instance, as Tony has shown many years ago, if all these B BCS state can be viewed as a single special orbital of Cooper pairs, and all the Cooper pairs are condensed into that orbital. Then you basically have one wave function. So there's no entanglement.
Sorry, I'm not talking, but this is Dyson.
Oh. Okay. But I heard this from somebody giving a talk, so sorry about Mike. But thanks for pointing this out to me. So what are the kind of correlated states we are interested in? I want to make a contrast with what the condensed matter people are basically talking about. For instance, we heard near Feshbach resonances, you have unitarity limit, so you have strongly correlations. And in the faster rotation cases, you have these incompressible Hall states. These are strongly correlated. And in the optical lattices, you have superfluid mode transitions. These are strongly correlated. Yes, these correlations arise because you are in the equilibrium when you have a lot of degeneracies near ground state. This is, in fact, not the same as what we want in quantum information science. What we want is correlated states from controlled dynamics. I think it's in this particular view that atomic quantum gases are particularly attractive. I mean, these are some of the attractive features I will not really try to get into here. So now, let me give you some, you know, possible confusions. Actually, I don't know what happened here. This should be all, creation operators. Yes. So you see, when you introduce the notation of identical particles, strange things actually happen. If I have a single photon, yes, going through a beam splitter, it can become a photon either in up state or arm or low arm. Then what you have is that you have possible two modes here. One is corresponding to photon mode in the upper arm of the interferometer. Second is the lower arm of the interferometer. So a single photon, in terms of notation of its mode, can become looks like entangled.
Why not minus?
It's just a phase factor. It's not important. And if you have this type of state, which is, for instance, a double well Josephson junctions, yes. If you have Fock state, n particles in the left and n particles in the right, this looks like it's separable. But if you write it in terms of first order quantization picture, you can see it's clearly inseparable. So how do we deal with this type of problems? The first idea came from actually Ellen McDonald's group a couple of years ago. They discussed the two coupled quantum dots. If you have two fermions, how do you define its entanglement? Well, those of us who ever did the quantum structural calculations for the atom realize if you have two valence electrons, what you do is that you expand your wave functions in terms of Slater determinants. What these guys are basically saying is the following, that if you can use all single particle space basis transformations, if your Slater determinants that is required to represent that function is more than one, then you are entangled. That means you have symmetries which are beyond what is required by the anti-symmetrization of fermions. This can also be done for bosons. This is what we did. It can be easily proven. If you have a system that contains two bosonic particles, you can always use unitary transformations on the basis such that the wave function would like the following. With two bosons in the first mode, two bosons in the second mode, two bosons in the third mode. It's a linear superposition of these. These modes are all linearly independent, and actually they are all orthogonal. So that means if your wave function requires more than one coefficient, then you can say for two bosons, you have correlations that are beyond what is required by symmetry. So now let me, this we have also recently done this for three bosons, but I think I don't know what my time is doing. So yeah, so I want to really get to the topic. So for three bosons, this can also be done. In fact, I can make an argument that along the directions for three bosons, we can show that within this so-called GHD classes, we can not only characterize entanglement in this way, but we can really have a measure that means compare each other. So for instance, one of the particular measures we derived 2 years ago is the following. I can say this is a sufficient condition. If you give me an M particle state, I calculate its maximum overlap to certain NGHZ states. If that probability is larger than 1/2, then it will be sufficient to say that state is entangled.
Oh, it's hard to implement the N body.
Yeah, it's hard, but I will show you that it is. Yeah, in some of these experiments, this can be done. So now let me get back to the system, you know, of both condensed gases. How do I really create controlled fashion these maximum entangled states? Well, this is a little bit of history. So for two particles, maximum entangled state is just one of the Bell states, yes? The pioneering experiment was done by actually Professor Aspect here, and they used the cascade spontaneous decay processes. And these days, this is basically there's an industry of people doing this now with spontaneous parametric downconversion or parametric oscillators. Basically, one photon comes in and it becomes two photons, then they become entangled in this way, in either polarizations or the directions or the frequencies. You can imagine if you break a Cooper pair in some controlled fashion, then this would also happen. And in fact, in optical lattices would be reasonably easy to do. When that NGHZ N, the number becomes 3, this is called the GHZ state. Of course, it was popularized by Professor Zollinger, Horn, and Greenberg. Yes, how they created that is, in fact, also pretty simple. They basically try to catch two separate pairs of Bell states, then bring one photon from each pair through a beam splitter. Then whenever they detect a photon, they didn't know from which one it came from. So it becomes either this state or this state. So that's a GHZ state. In fact, I mean, after the GHZ state, it took them a year, basically more waiting time. They did one more stage of this single photon counting, and they were able to do four photons in that GHZ state.
Okay, so they started with four photons, and they
detected two. No, they started with four photons. They put one from this pair, one from this pair through a beam splitter. That means mix them. They only detect one. Wow. Because they didn't know which one is from. This was actually Mark Rukowski's idea. Actually, it's very beautiful. So the largest, I mean, this may also offend some people. The largest, I think, four particle entanglement was made in the year 2000 by these people and of four trapped ions. And actually, due to a very clever idea by the previous speaker, Klaus Mohmer. So I think his idea really opened up a new window to think about engineering entanglement. What he viewed is the following. Instead of doing these on individual atomic level structures, you can view two coupled two-level atoms as a single molecule. If you want to entanglement between this state and this state, basically have an equal superposition between these two spin up and two spin down state, you can try to directly engineering transitions between them. Okay? So one possible way of directly engineering transition is the first particle makes a transition and the second particle makes the transition. So he actually showed this generates beautiful GHZ states if initially all the spins are either down or up. Because this interaction, if you write it out, then it becomes trivial to show this. I actually was able to give this to undergraduate quantum classes, and the students were able to do this, so it's not that easy to check. But if you write in terms of collective spins of these individual particles, you realize this interaction is, in fact, something we are rather familiar with. It is a Jx squared. Jx is the collective spins of all these particles, basically sum of the sigma x. Why I say that is something we are very familiar with? Well, if you look at the two-mode Bose-Einstein condensate, you can use the Schrödinger representation to introduce a pseudo spin. So in terms of the picture I gave you earlier for a particle that is condensed into one of these states, it simply means for each of these individual spin 1/2 particles, when they are condensed, their spins are all lying up in the same direction. So that's a coherent spin state. Yes. So in this state, you have mean field interactions. Mean field interaction is dependent on the scattering lengths of particle in one state plus the scattering length of the particle in the other state minus twice the scattering length of the cross-scattering interaction. So if you write in terms of this way, your Hamiltonian is U times JZ squared. JZ is, in fact, the population imbalance between these two states, or the population imbalance between your Josephson junction double well systems. So basically, this is a Z instead of X. If I had all the atoms initially in one state, then this is the Argand state of this system. So there's no dynamics except a phase. Well, I knew this, but I think when Klaus first told me about this idea, I immediately realized there's some similarities. But it didn't click until 3 years later. In fact, it's very easy, because pseudo-spins are block factors, yes, here. I can simply use optical transitions, optical Rabi oscillations to tip it. So if I had it originally along JZ, I can easily tip it to JX. This is very easy to show, because what you do is if you apply a laser coupling these two states, you introduce these rotations. So with these rotations, you can easily rotate the JZ into JX. So when you do that, what will happen is that, well, it's very easy to show these are possible two-state systems. And all you want is hopefully you would have an initial state where the particle number n is fixed and also known. That's all you want. For instance, in the Mach state, they could easily get that. Then you can do this. What happens is that once you apply these pulses, tipping your JZ interaction to the x directions, and after you wait a while, you make the GHZ state. Then you tip it back, because all spin up states and all spin down states are Argand state of your JZ squared. So that means you effectively created this N GHZ state with all spin up and all spin down. Each of these components is your Argand state system.
Can you take from what you described, just the one that you did a few years ago?
No, I think it's not. They did do the tipping, yes, but this is not the experiment they were doing.
What's the difference again?
Yeah, we can perhaps.
I still don't understand your proposal. How do you? What are the steps that you generate this NGHZ state?
Okay. Klaus showed that if you have JX squared, yes?
Suppose 10,000 particles over here.
10,000 particles. If you had a JX squared, if you had 10,000 particles initially lying up or lying down, you put this interaction on, all it takes is your weight. Mm-hmm. At certain times, these 10,000 particles, becomes like this. But the problem is it immediately goes away.
That's right. Yeah.
So it oscillates, the Zwanberg oscillation becomes this. So what I'm saying is that when you have this JZ squared, what you can do is that you can tip JZ to the X direction for that amount of time, such that when you get to this state, you tip JX back to JZ. Because this is the Argand state of JZ. This is also Argand state of JZ.
So you lock it in.
You lock it in, and you can have these things be an interacting condensate, and it would still work, right? So I'm not going to give you the detailed calculations of this. This is the idea. So of course, it's very difficult to find a closed two-level system, yes? Because spin exchange interactions will always bring atoms from one state, M state, to a different M state, as Eric has shown in his experiment. So how do we deal with that? And it turns out this idea can be easily extended to the ground state manifold of F to equal to one spinner's condensate. Mm-hmm. So now, in the ground state manifold, the idea is the following. If I have all the atoms being spin polarized initially, that means all the atoms being here or here, yes? So then all it takes is the following. If I put on a coupling between these two, if these Rabi frequencies are such that the Rabi frequency is stronger than the mean field interaction, then it turns out this coupling creates a Zeno subspace. Collisions will not bring atoms to this energy level. So after some time, you get a condensate in this plus that. All right? So these are the calculations, which I'm really, I don't think I want to show you how these calculations can be done. What is important is the following. It turns out, you know, in the single mode approximation, as you and Nick Bigelow's group has shown, the interaction is proportional to S squared. But in the three-level system, this S is really not an angular momentum. It has to decompose into three separate SU2 groups. Then you have this TZ squared, which is JZ type interaction between plus and minus component. All right? I think I've already got a warning sign. So this is how the Zeno substance is created. Basically, if you have a Hamiltonian, if you have a small term, if you have a large term, then when that large term becomes larger, the whole Hilbert space becomes into separate part. The small term only gives you adiabatic evolution within that, each of these subspaces. So now, I'm not going to give you the calculations. Let me just tell you one more thing. This is what we have recently done. What we have found is the following. Now I can generalize this not only to the two-mode Bose-Einstein condensate. I can really consider any two-level systems, individual qubits. As long as they have this kind of symmetrical interactions, it turns out the dynamics is analytical. It's analytical because of the following. These two to the n GHZ state, maximum entangled state, become a very good basis. In that basis, I can solve the dynamics. So suppose my JZY interaction, collective spin interaction, is along this direction, yes? What previously from Klaus's work, basically, he has shown the following, that for any initial state, as long as it's in the pointed, a spin pointed in the equator, or a spin that is lying in the equator plane, then all it takes is you wait. You wait some time, it becomes a maximum entangled state. The problem is, of course, that for distinguishable, that means non-identical particles, its spin may be pointed in the different directions. But this is not a problem. Distinguishable particle also means locally they can be individually addressed. So that means they are still locally equivalent. What turns out to be very interesting is that we can use some idea called the cluster state. This is some type of special, very entangled state that is good for universal quantum computation that was discovered by Hans Spriegel et al. It turns out that there are some techniques in this cluster state. And using those techniques, we were able to prove that for any arbitrary state, that means in the Bloch sphere, I can have spins initially pointing in all arbitrary directions. And I can answer this question. If it is pointed in the arbitrary directions, and I know I have a JY type or JZ squared type of interactions, then I just wait. What would be the maximum largest component of GHZ state? So because now I have a basis, yes, of GHZ state or maximum entangled state, and in fact it turns out the solution to be just so trivial, although it took us quite some time to understand it. For instance, if this spin is pointed in this direction, then you can see I can project into the polar direction, north pole direction, and this azimuthal direction, yes. But it turns out it's very easy for a spin 1/2 system, irrespective of which direction this spin is pointed, it can always decompose into two directions opposite to each other, but lying in the equator plane. Because this basis and that basis are orthogonal. Although geometrically they are antiparallel, but in practice they are orthogonal. So that means irrespective of which direction this spin is pointed, I could always using this maximum entangled state. And you can find the analytical solutions. Here is a graphical representation of the solution. Basically, the more white it is, the larger this maximum entangled G HD states its coefficient. So for instance, near the equator, I can show at certain times it becomes completely in this maximum entangled state. Although I don't know which basis it is, but this is easy because this is all locally equivalent. That means I can measure the correlations and try to determine them. And with a smaller number of particles, for instance, n equal to 3, 4, or 5, possibly realizable in Mott state, in three-dimensional Mott, and with n equal to 30 or 20, possibly realizable in these one-dimensional rods systems, and you can see there's a large region here around the equators where basically you will get maximum entangled state with very, very high fidelity. So
for any arbitrary initial state, you can determine the time you wait, they will always pass through the GHC?
Yeah, they would always pass, because we now have analytical dynamics for this. So let me summarize this part. I mean, I guess basically what I have said is, you know, we can use controlled dynamics. That means in the already interacting both condensed gases, we simply coupling laser pulses which tips the block vectors. By this, we can engineer entanglement. This entanglement seems to be robust because each of these entangled components is the eigenstate of the interacting system. And we can follow its analytical dynamics. And one thing I did not have time to address here is that what about its detection? Well, I think the detection is very easy comparing the first two states here. Because in one case, you would have number fluctuations, which is of the order of n. In the other case, you would have number fluctuations, which is of the square root of n. So what you want is that you make this state at a particular time, you detect its variance of the population number. You will see it would go from square root, that means exponent being 1/2, to exponent being of order 1. Yes?
How would that distinguish between the pure n-particle GHC state and the mixture?
Yeah, this is a very good question. Yeah, because in a classical mixture state, as Tony said, that you would also have this kind of fluctuation. But actually, this has already been studied quite extensively now, is that these dynamical controls that we are adding on, we can not only adding on it in the positive way, that means giving a time evolution into the positive time direction, we could give it a time evolution into the negative time evolution. So if you had a statistical mixture, that means you must have non-unitary evolutions, non-unitary, non-Hermitian, which after time reversal, it does not get back to itself.
But how would you actually explore that in practice?
So in practice would be I bring it into positive time, then I bring it to the negative time. I just want to detect whether it will become the original state again.
How do I bring it to negative time?
Because the positive time and the negative time is related to this coefficient, which if I use JY to rotate, I could rotate backwards or forwards. Yeah. Yeah, it's like echo, so you can go forward and backwards. So we have studied this problem, in fact. Yeah.
Well, echo can distinguish.
Yeah. Well, let me answer this. Let me give you this. Yeah. You know what? It's already a question session? Yeah, okay. So, yeah. Well, anyway,
let me first make a comment and then say why I'm making a comment, as it were.
Okay.
You gave the impression, I think, that generating n-particle GHC states for n greater than about 5 was a terribly complicated business. Well, at least in a certain sense, it's rather simple. In condensed matter physics, people have already generated GHC states with n of the order of 10 to the 6th, and arguably even 10 to the 10. Now, these, of course, I think you know what I'm referring to. These are the, yeah. the states of a squid corresponding to circulating current.
Yeah, but what I want to compare is we define something called catness. Yes.
Catness.
That means how large a cat is.
Right,
how large a cat is not really how massive this state is. Right. In the superconducting Josephson junctions, you do have 10 to the 5 or 10 to the 6 electrons, Cooper pairs, circulating either this way or that way. Yes.
Right, yeah.
But it's a single qubit. It's a single two-state system.
Well, I mean, in the sense, it's a single system in the sense that the individual pairs, or if you like, the individual electrons, are strongly locked together by dynamical considerations. But then, so they are in the schemes you've got.
No, but these schemes I propose not only apply for both condensed gases, they also apply for non-condensed, that means distinguishable particles, yes?
Yeah, sure.
For instance, in the four ion trap case, they clearly showed that each individual ions can be addressed and measured. So that means they have four qubits, even though their cat is much, much smaller in physical size. But in Hilbert space, it's larger by a factor of six.
To produce these states, though, you've got to put on your Jz squared energy, which is a strongly collective energy, locking all these spins together. Which is exactly the same as in the supercomputer.
Yeah, yeah, that I agree. Yeah, yeah I agree with
that. Make a squid. And then turn off all interactions.
That's the difficult bit.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, that's impossible.
Right.
The reason I made this comment is that's not a problem.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with it.
But rather because in that case, I think one has a very simple way of detecting the difference between a superposition and a mixture, which is simply to, as you mentioned, to study the time evolution. You don't have to do anything about reversing or spin echoes or anything like that. You just measure the two time correlation functions. And that will tell you, at least in principle, unambiguously, whether you had a superposition or a mixture. In fact, it will tell you more than that. It will tell you whether any description in which the system was definitely in one of those two states at all times is viable or not. So I don't see why you shouldn't do the same.
But what has been studied is the following, particularly in the both condensed gases. Because for both condensed gases, you lose the individual addressability of each of these two-state systems. So what has been studied is you have to do collective measurement. In fact, in the multi-insulating state, these guys can only do collective measurement over many whales, not over a single whale. These dynamics I'm discussing are over each whale, yes? So in that case, what has been found useful is the following. So because of this rotation in the JY, I can add different phases in front, yes, because the rotation is driven by the laser. So if I had add a positive phase or zero phase, then that means evolving in the positive time. And then in the negative phase, I would evolving in the negative time. What does that mean? It simply means from the initial separable state, if I add a positive correlation or positive time, positive phase, then I'm evolving, I get into GHZ state. Now I can add negative phases such that I come back to the initial state. If during this process there has been any dephasing or decoherence such that I go from a pure state to become a mixed state, then the probability of coming back to the original state becomes very, very small. So by looking at the statistics, this is how we could address it.
I think what you described, as far as I understand it, is exactly what's called the spin echo measurement in the squid business. And people can actually know that it's good. They'll detect this kind of thing.
Yeah, I think in quantum optics we also do the spin echo, but usually we do this with respect to a single two-level atom, not to this entangled state.
So, the advantage that you can generate is if you simply restrict to a single two-dimensional field of space spanned by NR and depth, then greatly is the space and outputs. And that, in some sense, is exactly what I'm trying to do is how you then, as it were, take these apart so you've actually got effectively not one qubit, but two qubits. And how come you actually making a bit of contact between the sort of general statements about being part of the GHC statement that I agree with, and the statement is actually going to be useful for quantum computation.
Oh yeah, this is an excellent question. Actually, I have something that didn't get a chance to talk about. Yes, so this is a well. First, what we are trying to do is not. In fact, my group is not the only group. There are several groups. Yes, so you have this. This is also the same question as you said in the superconducting Josephson junction systems. You have this cat, which now in principle contains a lot of particles. Yes, how do you make their freedom becomes available? Yes, so what in this work, what we have shown is that by coupled with quantum measurement, you can make an encoding. That means if I give you a qubit, which I don't know its state, yes, then I encode that qubit to these collective large systems. So one thing is that this makes the measurement much easier. Yeah, I mean, not the opposite way to extracting more qubits out, which we don't have any idea yet. But if you give me a single qubit, for instance, from a photons, from a single atom, I can encode into this larger.
Massive error.
We have also other questions.
Oh.
Okay, could you move back to one slide to the conclusions? I want to say that if you consider one-dimensional spin chain, spin one-half chain,
yes,
with SX and SZ interaction, that can be mapped to essentially pretty much free fermions, and three one-dimensional fermions for about which we know everything. And I don't think these conclusions apply in that case. So maybe you should specify more precisely which model you consider, because for one-dimensional spin chain, I don't think the conclusions apply.
Well, but the one-dimensional spin chain, its interaction is not a total Jx squared, because you only have neighboring, yes?
Yeah,
when
yeah,
I have
that's
Jx
what I mean.
Squared, I have also long-range interaction.
So that's what you need to in your model?
Yeah, I need a long-range
interaction. In your case, every spin interacts with every
spin. Every spin interacts with every spin. Yeah, you're right.
Okay,
this is an important point.
So I wonder how that would be implemented physically.
In fact, a one-dimensional spin chain has been shown by Werner et al. I mean, you can actually do short code. Short code is using 9 qubits to make a logical qubit of zeros and ones so that it can correct one bit of arbitrary errors. That means each, you know, if you had an error on one of the qubit, as long as it's not lossy, that means the errors does not lead to the loss of this qubit itself from the system, then it can be corrected. I mean, one-dimensional spin chain, for instance, yeah, that type of interaction can be used to do that.
I have a question about how difficult it is to make an entanglement. So the state you make is basically shooting a cat of two macroscopically different states if your bits is very long, right? And if you choose that Hamiltonian alpha z square, you basically truncate the two degenerate state. In addition, you add certain terms to allow basically tunneling across the barrier. What are the constraints on those additional terms you can apply? If those additional terms is weak, then the coupling will be very, very weak. I mean, you have to go through this tunneling process. That means the entanglement probably takes very, very long time to achieve. You have estimate about...
Yeah.
I mean, on the other hand, you also need a... Tunneling has to be weak enough compared with the energy scale set by alpha JZ squared, because you still want to stay in the truncated two-level system. Right?
Yeah, maybe I did not make it clear. First, in this scheme, the system I imagine, I don't have tunneling. These can be just particles in the magnetic track. Yes, I can have two internal states. So the interaction that is mediate this entanglement is an exchange interaction. And actually, Imamo Bloch's recent experiment has shown that this interaction can be tuned using Fetchbach resonances. Yes, as long as your system is not SU2 symmetric, then these three scattering lenses are different. Then the only possible form of the Hamiltonian has to be either Jx squared or Jz squared. So once you have that, then all you need to worry about is how the spatial mode of your wave function may become different between different components. And that's why, we prefer this ferromagnetic spin equal to one, because actually all the spatial mode is the same.
If you're having Jz squared, yes, and have nothing else, then surely the states we've given Jz are going to be eigenstates. You're going to stick there forever. Surely you need some kind of contact, some kind of operation which changes Jz.
Yeah, we tip it. So that this is a Rabi flipping, can be done with laser or microwave.
You need that.
I think Eric also. I mean, several other groups have shown this can be done very efficiently, in the sense that you still remain a condensate irrespective of in which state. So that means spatial mode is overlapping.
Okay, I think we are on time now for the coffee break, unless there are other questions. No? So thanks a lot again for the demonstration.